hearing on Senate Bill 5541. Nicewander, any
yes.
comments?
Chair Miller, committee members, yesterday we completed the public testimony on the budget hearing, the detailed discussion, and there were some public testimony interests expressed, and so we set aside the first few minutes of today's hearing before we go on to work session to receive that public testimony.
All right. Mr. Campbell et al., you want to come up in whatever order you choose, and we'd be pleased to have your testimony.
Chair Miller, members of the member of the committee.
For They're the record, watching on closed circuit.
Oh, good, good. Know, so. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell with the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and we're here today to support the DPSST budget and also to speak in favor of the dollars allocated within the budget for debt service for a new facility. I have written testimony that you're receiving now that I am not going to give this morning. Because we've brought several chiefs of police here, each who will share briefly with you the importance of this budget to their agencies. And I want to begin just by introducing them, and then I'm done. On my far right is the president of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, Chief Steve Weiniger from the city of Tualatin. Next to me is Chief Jim Harper from the city of Dallas. And then sitting behind us somewhere is Chief Rob Elkins from the city of Molalla, and Chief Mark Adams, the Chief of Police from the city of Kaiser. And each of them will share in turn briefly. If you do have any questions, of course, please ask them. And we're willing to respond in whatever fashion you'd like. I'm going to step down now unless there's a specific question for me. And I'm going to have Chief Elkins come up and take my place.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm next on the list.
Sure, go ahead.
Chair Miller, members of the committee, my name is Steve Weiniger. I'm the Chief of Police of the City of Tualatin, and I'm also the current president of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. I'm here today to express our support for the DPSST budget. I've submitted some written testimony, and I'm not about to read it and waste your time going through what I've already written. The DPSST budget includes a new facility for us, and it's critical that we get this facility. About 5 years ago, there was a study that was done that looked at how much training we needed to provide the basic police candidates as they go through the academy. And if we identified better than, or right about 16 weeks worth of training, about 640 hours worth, due to limitations in the current facility, we're only providing about 400 hours right now, which is roughly two-thirds of what we should be providing. The remainder of that training is left to the local agencies. And frankly, what our agency does is we end up having to assign one of our existing personnel to complete the training that should be done at the academy. So we lose not only the new people, but one of our existing people in order to complete that training. In addition to that, the facility as planned also includes some important skills areas like the firearms range and the driving course. And right now, driver's training is done on an abandoned airstrip down at Corvallis. And frankly, it does not provide the level of training that we really should be giving to our people. And so the only way that we're going to get there is to get a facility that contains all of those elements together, and that's included in the budget. There's been a lot of planning that's gone into this facility. We've been working for better than a year on it.
Do testify on a bill.
And, you know, it's really, we've really done some preparation, and what is proposed is what we need to get to where we should be. And I'll be happy to answer any questions. I think next on our list is Chief Harper from Dallas.
Okay. We'll just hear from the panel and then maybe some questions be generated.
Chair Miller, members of the committee, my name is Jim Harper. I'm the police chief of Dallas Police Department. Like my associates, I'm here as a representative of Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and we're here to support the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training's budget and their future, hopefully their future core facility and update. I'm also here as a part-time instructor, as many of us are in law enforcement and the whole public safety field. and we help support the academy through instructing on a part-time basis. In fact, I'll be leaving here today and going over to the academy and instructing in firearm skills, and that's part of our survival skills curriculum and development. But one thing I wanted to indicate, as far as a need, right now, for instance, the basic police class that we're going to be instructing today, we're going to have them transport to an empty church in downtown Monmouth, because our facility is so full that we have to look for any available resources to have our classes. The Armory in Dallas, Oregon, is also used for defensive tactics. The range right now is being conducted at Adair. It's a military range, and so we use that. But all of these particular facilities require a huge amounts of time of travel. So we have to load everybody up, take them down there. So we're losing an hour on both ends. And when you have a lot of times an 8-hour day, you can see that you're losing probably a couple hours in just travel time and all the support that goes into making sure that you can move students around. Be perfectly frank with you, the facilities that we have right now, although they work, they're at a real basic level. So you have to kind of adapt your curriculum to the particular facility. So what you wind up doing is, instead of having a facility that makes that flow real well, you have to kind of divide the class and have different areas where you can do different things. And it really creates some problems from a standpoint of really proper training and some of those issues. So from my standpoint, I see it from two different issues. As a police chief, I support the development of a new facility. And from an instructor, I support the development of a new facility, just for common sense reasons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Miller, members of the committee, my name is Rob Elkins. I'm the police chief with the city of Molalla, also here representing the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. It's already been alluded to that in 1997 there was a study conducted involving not only police chiefs and sheriffs, but members of line officers, first supervisors, and academy staff that looked at the training that was being provided to law enforcement in Oregon. At that point, we had 8 weeks of curriculum that was basically lecture-based. Police work is a body of knowledge that isn't all in the mind. It takes an incredible amount of knowledge, but also takes an incredible amount of physical skill and decision-making as well. And then you heavily rely upon the officer's ethics to be applied well when making those decisions and carrying out his work. When we looked at what we needed to teach them, we also looked at the way we needed to teach them and decided to go away from a lecture-based curriculum and more of a scenario-based curriculum. This is part of the reason why the need for training went from 8 to 16 weeks. Not only that we needed to teach them a lot more than what they were currently being taught, but we needed to teach them in a manner that would bring them back to the agencies better prepared to take on the role that they were going to play. The scenario-based training that's currently being done couples the body of knowledge that the officer needs to do his job, the physical skills that he needs to do his job, the instruction in those, works on the decision-making process that needs to be carried through in order to carry out that decision. And it also carries in a great deal of ethical training. While the officer's going through this, they're being constantly monitored by people such as the chief here, who have great experience in law enforcement. They get to monitor what the officer's doing, and they get to identify problems and issues early on and remediate those, rather than the officer going through 8 weeks of training, coming back with problems that we then have to identify, try and take care of after he gets back. Hopefully some of those have already been addressed and taken care of. And what that means for us, especially smaller agencies such as Molalla, is that when we get the officer back from the academy, he's far more ready to get into that car. A little less training done on our side, he becomes productive in a more immediate fashion.
Since the study, we've taken the step to increase it to 10 weeks. That still puts us at one of the lowest training levels in the nation. One of the main problems is that the facility that we have in Monmouth will not allow the expansion to a 16-week academy. They train not only police, but corrections, telecommunications, fire and parole and probation. And that that's a pretty broad spectrum, and they're being crammed into one small facility. The core facility has been identified as the main agenda of the chiefs in this state. So why? One of the areas that we've heard may be concerned is the price tag. What I'm told is that the price tag that's associated with the building of this academy is similar to what the cost would be for a four-year 4A high school. And when you compare, you know, a high school is incredibly important, but when you're looking at a learning institution that's training the people that you rely on to keep your homes, your families, your communities safe, that's a pretty high priority for all of us.
Thank you.
Hey. Chair Miller, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Adams. I'm here today, I'm the Chief of Police of Kaiser, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Associations of Chiefs of Police to strongly support the DPSST budget and to emphasize the importance of a new public safety academy. As you've heard these other chiefs talk, our academy, our staff at DPSST has really done a yeoman's job in the last few years of trying to improve the training. They've taken it from a model of a lecture that was really not a very good adult learning model to a scenario-based training, where instead of just hearing a four-hour lecture about a particular subject in law enforcement, not only are they practicing that, but they're getting all the other elements, ethics, skills training, decision-making, all molded in. We're doing a great job. Unfortunately, there's not enough time there. And this is can be okay if you're from a large enough agency where you can bring the recruit back with this basic training, do a field training program, and finish out the training over the next few months. The problem is not every agency in Oregon, in fact, the vast majority aren't large agencies with that kind of staff. They're Powers, Oregon. They're little departments that the officer gets that 10 weeks training and he's back, and that may be the majority of the training they get. Well, my family, if they need the police in Portland or they need the police in Powers, I want them to know they're getting a well-trained, fully trained police officer. So I think that's one of the important reasons we do something to get a facility where we can do a 16-week training. They've done a great job of cramming a lot of info, a lot of training into 10 weeks, but that facility that we currently have won't handle it anymore. They've got to expand. I come from a long family of police officers from Texas, and when I talk about our training and mention that it's only 10 weeks, they always say, 10 weeks? My goodness, you know, I mean, Mississippi's twice that long. How can you guys get by with just 10 weeks training? And I said, well, we're working on it. You know, maybe, we're trying to get there. Pardon me?
Maybe we're starting from a different level.
Yeah, maybe. that could be. The gene pool, I don't know. But some of the things that come up that concern me, and this is something I heard yesterday. We had a training class held at our department for managing police pursuits, which everybody, you know, is aware that police pursuits is a huge liability issue and safety issue for our citizens. We're currently able to provide 40 hours of pursuit or EVOC, emergency vehicle operations training for our recruits, 40 hours, okay? Unfortunately, out of that 40 hours, 9 hours is spent transporting the recruit from the academy to the airport or wherever they find to do the training. 9 hours wasted. So instead of 9 hours behind the wheel, they're sitting 9 hours in a bus with somebody else behind the wheel driving them to the training. This is just if that doesn't sum it all up, why we need a core facility with the training, an EVOC track, firearms, everything in one place, where we can get the biggest bang for our buck. I don't know what does. And with that, I'll conclude. You've heard these other statements. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to try to answer them for you.
Questions? Ask about when the trainees are in the bus. How large a bus, and how many trainees are on one of those trips?
Senator Miller, I'm not sure of the size of the bus, but you have a class from, I don't know, 27, 30 people. I'm sure somebody from the staff will be able to answer that question better. But in my experience over there, they're constantly, half the class is going one way and half another. If they try to work, find a place to do the training, often they have to split a class in half. So you've got one half of your class in one building doing something and another half going somewhere else. And you've got to remember, too, the majority of our trainers are volunteers that come from different agencies around the state. So that just, you know, every time you have to split them up or move them, it just adds more and more downtime. People standing around instead of getting quality training.
What I'm thinking of is that maybe the time while you're sitting in the seat could be utilized for some training purpose, whether or not there's, and maybe you do already, it looks like Diane's coming up to tell me you do. But do you want to go ahead and cut me off and tell me what's actually happening on that bus?
Chair Miller, thank you very much. Members of the committee, I'm Diane Middle, Director of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. The challenge that we have is not only are we transporting the students to those locations, but we're also transporting the equipment. So we have students that are also operating the same vehicles with a number of students in them that are then going to be used as the training vehicles when they arrive. So it's very difficult to do any instruction as a group because we'll have 5, 6, 8 vehicles which with a number of students transporting those out there to do emergency vehicle operations, or if we're doing traffic stops, the additional cars that will be used for that purpose. So you'll have a few students in vans with equipment, and it'll have signage for showing training, those kinds of things, and all their gear, and you'll have other students split between vehicles getting them out there because we don't have a way of storing the vehicles at the airstrip.
Also in testimony, there was mention of kind of a 8-hour day, 8 hours of training. That can't be accurate, is it?
Chair Miller,
imagine that there's training going on for a whole lot more than 8 hours in a day.
Chair Miller, there actually is training going on for more than 8 hours a day, but what we have to be cautious of is that the students come from a number of different agencies represented by different unions and associations that limit the amount of hours that we can actually be working them according to their contract before their agencies are then paying overtime. So we do break up their days sometimes to make maximum use of the facility and the equipment, but we have to be cautious that we keep each student at approximately an 8-hour day so we don't get into an overtime situation for the agencies. While the state is paying for the training, the agencies are paying their wages and benefits while they're there, so we have to be very cautious of that.
It just seemed to me that maybe we need to have a discussion about that particular arrangement. It's a good thing the military doesn't operate on an 8-hour day concept, because I remember my brief experience, we had some training go on in some really odd hours.
Senator Miller, I could tell you from an instructor there, and what I've seen is often with these fellows, their brain's full. After 8 hours of intense, just, you know, they get where they're just glazed over and they can't take anymore, and they still have to go back and study that evening. So
a lot of people suggest that about legislators. It doesn't take a full 8 hours.
I've never experienced that myself.
Thank you. Were there other questions or comments from the committee?
Just wondering if we ought to have as strong a union as the police officers do on the legislators' side.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further testimony? Is there anyone else who wish to testify on? I'll get the number. Senate Bill 5541. Sure, come forward.
Is Senator Troll going to come back?
He's testifying on a.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rob Carnahan. I'm the Assistant Fire Chief of Clackamas County Fire District Number 1, and currently the chair of the BPSST, the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. Sitting next to me is Chief John Stein from the City of Dallas, or the Dallas Rural Fire Protection District. We are supportive in the fire service community of the budget for DPSST, and certainly proud of that agency, and I think it's one that each of you can be proud of in the state. Senator Thoreau was at a open house that was conducted over there, and where he actually saw the facilities, went through, and saw what the situation is from a training standpoint. I would like to speak first of all about the board, and as you know, the BPSST is one of the larger boards that exists, and it's made up of 23 stakeholders of the public safety community, which is fairly diverse. We've got fire people, we've got law enforcement, corrections, private security, telecommunicators, and the like, serving on that board. We began reviewing the budget requests of the department, the board did, over a year ago, and we had input into it. The director, Diane Middle, has done an excellent job of seeking policy direction from the board and then developing the budget based upon the guidelines that have been laid out in law and practices that from around the public safety community in the United States. And as those discussions were held for well onto a year, even after they were required to be submitted to the governor, we had input, we massaged and changed things based upon industry standards and the state's needs. Chief Stein has been appointed, and he's been looking specifically from a fire perspective, meeting weekly with the facilities group that has been working, doing just a real yeoman's job, I think, and on behalf of the public safety community. And he can speak to some of the facility questions and needs. Although the facility that is in question doesn't have a lot of application at this point to the fire service, it does have some. The emergency vehicle operation course is something that we will utilize, the fire service community will utilize, as well as the other disciplines in the public safety community. The classroom facilities will be available to us for institutes and classes, and I'm sure you've heard testimony about all of the offerings that are there. I think I can say that representing the board, that we fully support the budget. We've had a lot of input into it, its development, its proposals, and encourage a due pass recommendation. I'd be glad to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you for your testimony. Proceed.
Chair Miller and members of this committee, my name is John Stein, and I'm the fire chief of the city of Dallas.
I'll get it.
and as Rob has said, also on the core facility committee that's been looking at this facility for approximately 14 months now. And I'd like to speak specifically to what I see some of the areas that can benefit the fire service. And what makes this facility unique is that it has the opportunity to serve both the police and fire agencies. And I think that's a pretty awesome facility if you can make it do two things and for the price of one. As was mentioned, I too agree that we could use the emergency driving track for emergency driving. Currently, we are required to certify, well, we're not required, but we do certify our drivers, and that becomes an issue of where do you train these people. The streets of Dallas, I'll use for example, probably aren't a good place to go out and turn on your lights and siren and wave to the people and say, sorry, just training. So we need a place that's safe and can be used for emergency driving. And currently, I would say that is a weakness in the fire service, especially for the smaller agencies, that we don't have the ability to train our drivers in emergency driving. And that would certainly be a benefit. Live fire training. Obviously, we need to train our people to do structural firefighting, and as we have fewer and fewer incidents, many of us came through the ranks. That's where our training came from, was from actual firefighting. It's a known fact, it's a statistical fact, that there are fewer fire incidents right now, and so our training must be conducted with what's called burn-to-learns, taking existing structures and using those. Not probably the safest method available, not to mention that it's not as nearly as an accepted practice as it used to be by the neighbors who say, I can't burn a pile in my backyard. How can you light this fire and set this smoke into the neighborhood? So small departments don't have the ability to have a live fire training facility, and it would be it'd be great to be able to have a central place where people could come from all over the state of Oregon and spend a weekend there and get some quality training time in a training facility that's controlled and safe. And part of the committee has visited such a structure, and they are out there, and it would certainly be a benefit to the fire service. Advanced training. I know we have people who have been in the fire service for 10, 15, 20, 25 years or longer, and it would be nice to have a facility where they could come and spend a week, much like we do at the National Fire Academy, to exchange ideas, bring in some outside instructors that are known throughout the nation and have some national recognition, and re-energize these folks and get them in an academy-like setting where they can not only attend the classes but exchange ideas. We don't have that at this current time. Joint training of fire and police. We kid each other, but we probably show up on the same scenes a majority of the time. But there isn't a lot of exchange that goes on between us other than at the scene. And this facility would allow us to have some joint training possibilities, hazardous material training together, or school incidents, for example. I know the police have done a lot of training on school shootings. And obviously the police obviously the fire departments would be involved in that. But we don't have any joint training, that sort of thing. So what's our role when we get there? Are we the human shield like they were in Colorado where we roll our fire trucks, or do we stay out? Or we need to have the ability to train together, and that would be just a great opportunity to do that. We need a center for fire training in Oregon. We need a hub of the wheel. I know a lot of fire departments support the idea of regional training, and we continue to support that idea also, but it would be nice to have a facility that's the center or the core of this training, and we could go out from it. And like I said, I like to view that as the center or the hub of training, a place where people know that they can go to. Finally and lastly is I think it would really benefit, and I'm going to speak, sorry here, Chief, for a second, but about volunteers. And it's the majority of your firefighters in Oregon are volunteers. And one of the issues facing volunteers right now is the fact that we're having a difficult time recruiting and retaining volunteers. There's just no doubt about that. The agencies are having a tough time. There's a lot of different issues that cause that. There's a lot of reasons for that. But my experience has taught me that if we can provide them with quality training and not waste their time, that's the key thing to a volunteer. If we can give them quality training, challenge them and not waste their time, our chances of retaining them for a longer period of time increases. And I think a facility such as that gives us an opportunity to send these people to a place where they will be challenged and they will be given the opportunity to really improve their skills. And again, speaking as a volunteer chief, I think that would have a huge impact on the fire service in Oregon. So I'd just like to conclude by leaving you with this. The fire service of today is expected to provide more training in more areas than we ever have in the history of our service. And we're looking at this as an opportunity for the policymakers of this state to help us out and help us meet these expectations. And we too recommend a due pass on this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 5541? The final witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Russ Spencer for the Sheriffs. And Mr. Chairman, I doubt you remember, but many years ago you took me aside and very kindly told me that in the legislative arena, less is more. So I will be extremely brief in my comments to you today. The Sheriffs of Oregon do support the DPSST budget and are particularly supportive of the new core facility and the training that is envisioned therein. I want to tell you that we have seen our working relationship with DPSST improve significantly over the last several years, and in large part I think this was due to the inclusion of all the various stakeholders in the planning process for this core facility. I think what you're looking at is a real first-class operation that will provide the best possible service and training to the citizens of the state of Oregon, and we're here to assist you in this process in any way we can. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Mr. Chair, I just am glad to know that he gives that kind of advice. Occasionally, I'll remind him of that when he goes on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stroll. All right, anyone else wishing to testify? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5541. We'll open a work session. We need to get.
We could stand at ease for a few minutes until Representative Hansen comes back.
All right. We'll be in recess until we gather up an additional member to constitute a quorum. We're in recess. Safety Subcommittee in a work session, open a work session on Senate Bill 5541. Mr. Nicewender?
Thank you, Chair Miller. Committee members, I placed before you both spreadsheets and a cover memo that, in summary fashion, covers the recommended adjustments to the DPSST budget. In total, you will see adjustments that are $921,212 to the other funds, to the budget bill. Yes, we do. In the memo, I detail those adjustments. In general, the adjustments relate to central government service charges, AG rates, PERS, telecommunications, Secretary of State audit charges. The most significant reductions relate to a salary adjustment made for seven vacant positions that were budgeted above second step. That's $172,145. There is a debt service reduction of $813,375. This is a technical adjustment also that the governor's office provided as at the opening hearing. This is in relationship to CFAA funding, wherein there was an understatement of the beginning balance for one of the recipients, and so this adjustment is made here. Both DAS and LFO are recommending that the amount of debt service funding that is provided in this budget is unscheduled until there is a time that the COP, the amount of the project is approved and the COP sale is also made. Approximately $4.6 million is in this budget for debt service on a facility. Also, an addition to this budget is a project coordinator. This $170,262 was in the capital construction bill, House Bill 5029. However, normally an FTE by itself would not necessarily be there since that project is not approved yet. And regardless of whether DPSST owns this facility or DAS does, and there's legislation before this body to address that issue, DPSST does need this coordinator position. So LFO's recommendation is that it be included in the budget bill. Under the Criminal Justice Services Division, there is a policy package adjustment, package 114. There are several positions in there, and three of those are phased in at December 2001 to reflect a more realistic timeline. That results in a $52,870 reduction. Package 115, we would recommend that you unschedule that because it depends on passage of legislation that would lift a sunset on the 911 funding. The adjustments to the fire standards and training are technical in nature. There is one budget note recommended for both this department as well as the Department of State Police budget when we work session it. And this is a budget note that requires both of these agencies to jointly form a work group with the State Fire Marshal to assess ways to identify ways to increase the revenue available for Oregon's fire programs. In testimony for both agencies, they talked about the fact that the fire insurance premium tax revenue was not an adequate base for them, and efforts to increase that were not allowed to go forward this biennium, in large part because of the retaliatory tax provisions in law that would have reduced general fund almost correspondingly. So I'd ask that you approve the budget note, which would require both those departments to jointly provide a report to the emergency board by April 2002 with their findings. Private security adjustments are primarily technical in nature, again relating to rate adjustments. The memorial fund that's funded through this budget, LFO's recommendation is that the $517,500 expenditure limitation for that program be separated out in the appropriation bill. As it is now, it's folded into the agency's one-line other funds and limitation, and because of the nature of this program and the early expenditure patterns, it's necessary to set that out so that we can separately track it. It is possible that the expenditures could exceed this amount, but it gives the legislature clear visibility into the amount funded and also the expenditures that they are making at that level without jeopardizing the operating budget for the facility. The capital construction comments here, this bill
Excuse
is not
me,
before
Larry.
You.
Yes, and don't come back.
Sorry about that. The comments on page 2 about capital construction, this bill is not before you, but It's standard for this subcommittee to pass on a recommendation to a later subcommittee yet to be named that will be addressing that capital construction bill, that will address the facility for DPSST in some fashion. The recommendation the LFO has is that this bill, when it does come before that committee, that this subcommittee direct both DAS and DPSST to continue to jointly complete the site evaluation and selection process they're in now and develop a report for ways and means that would provide all the required information, and I've outlined that for you there. There are still, as they mentioned in testimony, there's four sites still under consideration. It's very preliminary. We didn't get into a lot of detail about the conceptual drawings of the facility, nor the cost at this point. So this is set out in a two-stage process wherein they are more than likely to come back to the Capital Construction Committee with a request, a site-specific request for funding to purchase a site and get through programming and schematic design, at which point they would go back and do that work and probably come back to an interim emergency board with a complete proposal that would also address the questions that the emergency board placed before them last interim. No adjustment necessary for you in this, in the bill before you, but if you would adopt that recommendation, I think it will help the process when we do get to the capital construction bill. There's only one budget expectation statement, and it relates to the direction we gave the Department of Justice and all agencies working closely with the Department of Justice for cost containment. In final comments, the recommended adjustments to the appropriation bill are outlined there at the bottom of page 3.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Doyle.
Larry, I'm curious on the, under stage 2, the bullet point right on the bottom of the page about completing the analysis of the cost effectiveness. Haven't we already done that analysis to determine that we need a new site?
Chair Miller and Representative Doyle, the background on that particular request is it came up in both emergency board meetings, and it has to do with if the site selected is in proximity to Western Oregon, whether or not it's more cost-effective for them to maintain a part of the operations there where they have access to facilities, classrooms, or not, or whether they build a full-service academy that's separate and apart from that. And that analysis has not been able to be done until they have a site-specific proposal with which to make it.
Okay.
Senator,
I was just wondering, I think we're through with the presentation. Director Middle, is there anything that we were recommending that causes any problems for you?
Chair Miller, Senator Trow, I've had discussions on all of these, and I know all of this moves us forward in the direction we need to go.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Trow moves the LFO recommendations on Senate Bill 5541. Is there a discussion of the motion? Objection? Hearing and seeing none.
Vote explanation.
The motion is adopted. Recognize Representative
Leonard.
Ben Leonard.
Mr. Chair, I would have been an enthusiastic yes for this budget as it is. I can only be a reluctant yes. I was liking everything I saw in this budget, but when I saw Russ Spencer testify in favor of it, it clouded.
Even though it was brief. It was just enough.
That's the best part about Mr. Spencer. He is a brief. And, anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, I think we also need to, Senator Trow, in the final portion of the LFO recommendations, there is some amendments proposed to Senate Bill 5541. As I understand it, you have moved that
I will move those, yes.
Line 10, subsection 1, delete $20,795,668, insert $20,170,331, and in line 11, subsection 2, delete $5,400,000, insert $4,586,625, and after line 11, add new line and section sub 3 to separate out the $517,500 Public Safety Memorial Fund.
Let it never be said that I haven't reduced the budget.
So noted.
It's about time.
Thank you. Parting gifts. All right. Is there discussion of Senator Trow's motion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, it is adopted. And Senate Bill 5541 is moved to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Carriers. Representative Doyle to the House, and Senator Trow, thank you very much. We'll present it before the full Ways and Means Committee and on the Senate floor if we can get it past that big committee. And I thank you all for your testimony and participation.
Just a parting comment. Tomorrow we will be having a public hearing, possible work session on a bill that's in Ways and Means. It has to do with the card lock program, and also a work session on state police's budget.
Yeah. All right. With that, the committee is adjourned.
Thank you.